Hello again, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 22nd of September. Making Democracy Work Summit, Friday, October 3rd and Saturday, October 4th in Stevens Point, and it is sponsored by the League of Women Voters. This hour of the program, we'll be talking about whether Wisconsin's polling places are ready for what could be a record turnout or what may still need to be done, the importance of voting, how you can vote in the state of Wisconsin, making it easy to vote, and there are some difficulties. We'll find out what the ruling is that the League of Women Voters believe would disenfranchise voters here in the state of Wisconsin and possibly cause some real problems with the election. It's desire to overturn a recent decision of the Government Accountability Board and change election procedures. We will look at that. We'll talk about young people voting and a number of other issues this hour of our program, and also give you a chance to look at the summit that's taking place, Making Democracy Work. You, of course, are invited to attend, but I think that registration needs to take place today, so we will talk about how you can do that. We'll have several guests with us during the course of this hour. We are starting with Melanie Ramey, who is president of the National League of Women Voters in Wisconsin, and also Andrea Kaminsky, who is executive director of the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. Later, we'll be talking with Peggy Taylor, who is a producer. It's going to be interesting. I wish this were happening all over the state, but maybe it's just a tryout for this happening everywhere in the country. There's going to be some performance art related to voting in several of the Milwaukee voting locations on November 4th. So we'll be talking about that. And we welcome Andrea. Hello, Andrea. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hello. Thank you.
Hi. Thanks so much for being here. And also, Melanie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll be welcoming phone calls as well, as we always do. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join our conversation. Isn't it interesting when you think about it that the League of Women Voters was founded not all that long ago, 1920 wasn't that long ago, to educate, this still amazes me, newly emancipated women voters. We haven't been voting really all that long, have we?
No, and, you know, it's really quite interesting. I think that a lot of times we don't know the history and how difficult it was for women to get the vote. And actually, historically, we know that a really significant date was referred to historically as the Night of Terror, and that was on November 15th, 1917, when women were arrested because they had been picketing in front of the White House with signs to urge President Wilson to give women the right to vote. And so he, I guess, got tired of looking at them and so forth and had them thrown in jail.
Oh, my.
And they actually were tortured. One of them was hung up by her hands for a couple of days. They were given only water from pails that were infested with worms. One of them went on a hunger strike, and she was tube-fed. I mean, it was not easy for women to get the right to vote, and that's why I guess we feel so strongly how important it is for us all to vote, because this has not been something, you know, that's been easy come by.
Right. And yet we don't. I know we're anticipating a large turnout this November. We always say it's going to be very large, but I've always wondered, Andrea, why we don't see 90% voting turnout or 95% in huge presidential elections. And, well, there are more than just the presidency on the line here, but in elections like this.
Well, voting is voluntary, and maybe some people don't understand all the issues that there are out there and how important it is. The fact is, it's only once every 4 years in this country that we get to vote for president. In some countries, they call an election more often than that. In our country, we hold an election, and it's only once every 4 years. It's really too bad that some people don't vote. I think that the League is doing all we can to try to educate voters and try to get them beyond those 30-second spots that sometimes leave people more confused or more confused than knowledgeable.
Mm-hmm. Why are you not, I would imagine that you would like to be doing this. Why isn't the league, and maybe you are involved in the presidential debates, why aren't you sponsoring and even moderating one of those debates? It seems as though you're a natural for that.
Well, you know, we used to do it. And in 1988, the league quit doing it. And they simply quit it because of the demands of the two campaign organizations were really such that we felt it perpetrated a fraud on the American voter. The candidates' organizations wanted just to add these debates to their list of campaign trail charades and didn't want any substance and wanted to control how all the questions were asked and et cetera, et cetera. So that's why the league got out of the business. And people don't understand now. You see, there is this commission that's called the National Presidential Campaign Commission. It's actually owned by the Republican and Democratic parties. And that's why you never have any third-party candidates even get a chance to be present, because the two principal parties keep them out. But that's why we won't participate.
Let's talk about Wisconsin's polling places. I know that the summit that's coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend, Andrea will be examining whether Wisconsin's polling places are ready for this record voter turnout or what may yet need to be done. Are they ready? How do we have to prepare?
Well, I know that our municipal clerks and county clerks and the election commission in Milwaukee and our government accountability board, they're all really busy preparing for this election. They've got a huge amount of work to do. They're recruiting and training poll workers. And some communities have a real shortage of poll workers. That is one issue. And we do encourage people to become poll workers. They can do that by contacting their municipal clerk. And it's a great way to see the election from the inside and to be part of the election and making it happen. The Attorney General's lawsuit leaves some questions up in the air as to whether we're ready or not. And I know the clerks are all wondering that.
Let's talk about that lawsuit. What's it all about?
Well, the Government Accountability Board twice rejected a proposal to require anybody whose name has been entered two different ways in two different databases, the statewide voter registration system and another database, whether that's DMV for most people or the Social Security database. If your name has been entered and your address two different ways, two different times in your life, there is some question, and your records don't match. Federal law requires that we have a statewide voter registration database, and it requires that this matching take place. It does not specify what to do when two records for the same person don't match. In Wisconsin, because of our very decentralized election system, where we have elections administered, you know, in some 1,700 plus municipalities around the state, or actually, I think it's more like 1,900, and 1,400 of them plus didn't have voter registration even before 2006, when federal law required it. Our database has been a big process and a big challenge to implement. The matching portion of it, or the matching function, only became functional on August 6th of this year. And we are doing the matching now with new mail-in registrations as required by federal law. What the lawsuit is all about is whether we go back to January 1st of 2006 and do the matching for all of the registrations since then, which is what's required. But the question is, do we do that before the election or not?
I see. And when will there be, and who makes an ultimate ruling on this, Andrea?
I'm sorry?
Who makes the ultimate ruling on this?
Judge Sumi, I guess, in Dane County will make the ultimate ruling. Right now, the lawsuit is before Judge Sumi, Dane County Circuit Court.
And that needs to be decided fairly soon, I would think.
Well, I know that the local clerks are—they're kind of chewing their fingernails right now. They don't know what they're going to be asked to do, and every day that passes makes it that much more difficult. In the meantime, you know, they need to be recruiting and training poll workers.
Right.
They need to be sending absentee ballots to people overseas. They need to be getting absentee ballots out to people in their communities who need to vote that way.
And when you talk about a difference, my understanding is this could be a very minute difference, right? You could have the same name, but instead of a space between a last name, or it could a lot of people would have mismatches.
That's correct. What they're finding in doing their matching is that approximately 1 in 5 records are turning up problems for these new registrants that they are checking. And in fact, the Government Accountability Board, which is made up of 6 retired judges, I kind of assume they've been voting all along. They said, let's do a test, and they checked their own names and found that 4 of the 6 didn't pass this HAVA checking match.
And I think the other thing that we know is that this has nothing to do with fraud. These things are just common things that happen. For example, another issue is people with hyphenated last names.
Right.
Sometimes in one database, the first name may have been entered. In another instance, the second name may have been entered. And these are not fraudulent things, but, just because people have been writing it down in different places, mm-hmm. different times. One of the things that has made it very difficult to get a database in this state has been that that the poll lists that were kept often in handwriting. So it was very difficult to even read it, to put it in to a database. And in speaking about how many municipal voting places we have, in the United States there are 9,000 municipal clerks. We have 2,000 of them in Wisconsin. So that gives you some idea, of how much more complex the whole system is here.
Right. We're going to welcome phone calls for our guests. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And before we go to phone calls, let me take an email. My son, this is Dean of Viola. My son is playing in a band on a cruise ship around Italy and will not be in the United States during the voting in November. How does he vote?
Is there a way he can receive mail?
I'm assuming yes.
Well, I would think he could receive an absentee ballot, but and he should, or you, or whoever is sending the email, maybe should contact the clerk, their municipal clerk, and have him sent an absentee ballot. One of the things that is at issue too with this checking back and forth is that absentee ballots are sent out. A lot of them are sent overseas. They're sent to the military who are in Iraq and Afghanistan. If those come back and they have to be matched and there would be mm-hmm. some mismatch, there would be no time for them to correct it or to do anything about it.
Let's pause for a moment. We'll return and take many phone calls that are coming in. If you have a hard time getting through, you can always send an email at talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. And if you want to join us by phone, you'll get a chance to get through eventually, 800-486-8655. Our guests are Melanie Ramey, president of the National League of Women Voters in Wisconsin, Andrea Kaminsky, who is the executive director of the League of Women Voters in the state of Wisconsin. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls. Mark from Stoughton is our first caller. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. It was a great program, as usual, and talking about a very important issue. My question is more of a nuts and bolts issue, though. I'll be moving from one part of the state to the other. I'm currently registered in my hometown, and I'm concerned, am I going to be able to re-register in my new location in time to vote, or is my only option to take an absentee ballot? And then if I do that, what about this matching thing of the databases? And I'll take my call off the air.
All right. Thanks so much for your call.
This is Andrea. I think that it depends a little bit on when you're moving, and if you are moving within the last 10 days before the election, then it would probably be best to get an absentee ballot and vote in your current location, in your current municipality. You may vote in your new municipality if you've been there 10 days or more. And I would recommend that you bring proof of residence and an ID with you to the poll, just in case. With this matching, who knows what's going to be the situation. And in fact, we're kind of recommending that everybody do that. Bring it along just in case. It may save you time and save time for the other folks there.
Right. Melanie, I've heard from some reports that as many as one-third of all voters could cast their ballots by October 15. Are you getting that same information?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised to hear it because of the change in the law here that people can vote absentee without actually having to leave town to do it. A lot of people are finding that, you know, just more convenient to do that way. So it's highly possible that that will be the case. And, you know, it certainly is an option people have.
Let's go to Dick next from Sister Bay. Hi, Dick.
Hi, Kathleen. I want to go back to mention a little further what you had brought up regarding the debates and the history of the league being involved in them. And the one thing I would suggest is that if it's possible that during the league's summit in Stevens Point that a breakout session be held on the topic of how the league can re-enter the whole field of debates and to get that started. Everyone's in agreement what's happening now is not acceptable. And with the league's history, I think they should be considering that. So that would be a suggestion. But I also have a hypothetical question to direct to both Melanie and Andrea. And that would be, let's assume that the National League of Women Voters encouraged states to try to sponsor presidential debates, that they took that tact and encouraged the states. Would Wisconsin be willing to show leadership in that area by conducting such a debate and helping to organize it and sponsor it?
All right. Thanks so much, Dick, for your call. Andrea, you want to start?
Actually, I think I'll turn...
Turn that to Melanie?
Yeah, I think I'll turn that to Melanie.
All right, Melanie?
Excuse me, since I started talking about before, the answer is absolutely, you know. The issue has been actually in recent years, even in this state, that when we have elections, that a lot of the candidates who are incumbents don't want to participate in debates because they simply don't want to have questions asked about their record or whatever. So it's not ever been for lack of willingness on our part, but you know, the candidates have been reluctant often to subject themselves to questioning and defense of their record or whatever. I think if you think about it realistically, the caller's question, if the candidates would do a debate in each state or something like that, that would be 50 debates, which would be an awful lot. And I think the present time we're going to be lucky to get them to agree to do about three national ones. So certainly we would do anything we could to encourage that.
And thanks very much for your call. Cookie is next from Milwaukee. Hello, Cookie.
Hi. There's a wonderful film starring Hilary Swank as Alice Paul, who was one of the major influences towards getting the vote for women, and it's called Iron-Jawed Angels. And I'm sure all the different places that have videos could, you know, could access it there. It is just superb to see what these women went through and how they were tube-fed and et cetera. And also I'd like to make a comment that, you know, in Europe, many of them have just one or two elections. They don't have a school board election or they don't have, you know, county government elections. I think if we were to dovetail our elections, we'd have more people going out. Those are my comments.
Okay, thanks so much for the call. Anybody want to respond to that?
No, I just think she's right about the video, the Iron-Jawed Angel, that was out actually in theaters, and if people could get a chance to see it, I think they would be enlightened more about the history of how this all came to be. And also, she is correct about the frequency of elections, that we elect a lot of things in this country that other countries don't. But still, that's our way we are, and that's our culture. And, you know, I guess my greatest concern is that sometimes people don't seem to get the connection between what happens in Washington and what happens in their daily life, what happens in the Capitol in Madison, what happens in their daily life. But every time there's some bill that has to do with taxes, that there's some bill that has to do with the environment, there's some bill that has to do with, you know, everything, almost anything, it impacts all of our lives. And I just think somehow people don't understand the connections and just think, oh, politics is something separate from them. But it is not.
Right. Let's go to Kay from Madison next. Hi, Kay.
Hi. A couple of years ago, I read that absentee ballots aren't necessarily counted unless the election is close. And I wonder if you'd ever heard that and what is the rule in Wisconsin?
They are counted. They are counted in general. In most municipalities, they are counted by the election officials in the individual polling places, and they count them generally after the polls have closed on the day of the election. I believe in Milwaukee, they now have a central area where they count the absentee ballots, but. They are counted.
We had, and I know that you're with us for the first half hour here, and I'm interested in knowing about what the situation is nationally, which I'm sure you know, about optical scan paper ballots, which we have. Most states, I have read, have moved to this system so that after the election, any irregularities will know about them, or either that it'll be easier for us with optical and perhaps a little bit better for us to know what the real vote is here. What's the story with what has been a huge controversy in the not-so-recent past about the machines that we use?
Well, I like the optical scan. That's what we have here in Madison, and I like the fact that I get to hold a ballot and mark it, and I can look at it at the end, and I know there at the end of the day. Then it's scanned, and a machine does the count. There is a requirement in Wisconsin, which is not true in every state, that there be a voter verifiable paper trail for all votes, and that's also a good thing. Following the spring election this year for Supreme Court and, you know, and other offices, there were a number of counties that participated in a voluntary post-election audit, and you know, recounted and found that our systems were working very well. They turned up no errors.
And is there anything you want to say about that before we let you go, Melanie?
No, I think just to say that we want people to not be put off by this court suit. It will be resolved before the election, but just to be safe, be sure and take along with you to vote that day some form of identification, like your driver's license or whatever, because we want people to vote. And don't think that this is going to mean that you can't vote, because even if there is a discrepancy, when you get up to vote, if you have ID with you, they will permit you to vote that day. So please do vote, and don't worry about that you won't be able to.
Okay. Thanks, Melanie.
And thank you.
Yes, Melanie Ramey, president of the National League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. Andrea Kaminsky is staying with us, executive director of the League of Women Voters in Wisconsin. And later we'll be speaking with Peggy Taylor, who's co-producer of My Vote Counts. There will be some performance going on in some of the polling places in Milwaukee, which I think is really interesting. We'll talk about that a little bit later. Our phone number remaining, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join the conversation. Andrea, here's an email from Viroqua. My college-age kids, Wisconsin residents, received ballot application forms. I guess they were distributed by the McCain campaign in Ohio from the McCain campaign. It was only the college kids who received them, not her husband or herself. People need to be aware if they receive these forms unsolicited, there could be problems and invalidated applications. What can be done about this situation? Is this a problem here in Wisconsin?
Well, there have been some reports that there may be a problem in Wisconsin. There was a mailing by the McCain campaign that went to people. It had a ballot or it had an application for an absentee ballot. Unfortunately, it had in many cases the address of the wrong municipal clerk for the person. It's real easy to have these things happen because our municipalities are, as you may know, the lines. Sometimes it's people on one side of the street versus the other. We don't know for sure, whether this was intentional or not. But we do recommend that people look at what be critical thinkers, be critical readers, look at what they're getting. I think, you know, why not just call your own clerk, your municipal clerk, if you have questions about the election or the Government Accountability Board or the League of Women Voters, and get your information that way from trusted organizations.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell us, before we take more phone calls with questions about voting, about the Making Democracy Work Summit. It's people can still register for this, can't they?
Yes, they can register today online or by calling us at the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin in Madison. That number is 608-256-0827. They can register online on our website. And what it is it's actually an evening, a kickoff event on Friday evening, October 3rd, at the Ramada Inn in Stevens Point, and then a day of educational sessions on Saturday. You can register for one or both, either one or both, and we will have, it'll just be an opportunity to bring people together who are interested in good government to get a better understanding of the issues and to develop solutions, there will be advocates, it's open for the public. There will be speakers will include state and local officials and national experts. We hope that as many people will come as possible because it's an opportunity to get a little bit of a deeper understanding.
Let's go next to Jim from Pleasant Prairie. Hi, Jim.
Yes, good morning. At first, I wanted to compliment you, Kathleen, and Rhonda for having this program on this very all-important subject. Few Americans realize that the Republicrats, as I call them, have a signed contract, an agreement between the two of them that their presidential candidates will not have any debate with any candidate of an alternative party. And I would also like to share information with my fellow listeners about the book called No Debate, written by George Farah, that's F-A-R-A-H, subtitle, How the Republican and Democratic Parties Secretly Control the Presidential Debates. And thank you once again.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call.
Yeah, I'm not aware of the signed agreement. However, it was that issue that caused the League of Women Voters to withdraw from the presidential debates in 1988. It was a question of the two main parties the two major parties just kind of wanting to control every aspect of the debates. We have advocated here in Wisconsin, in the state of Wisconsin, the league has advocated for inclusion of third party candidates in the gubernatorial debates. Last time, we kind of feel that those candidates they challenge the major party candidates to go beyond the rhetoric of their campaigns and to really talk about the issues. And we think that voters should have that choice, that option, and that we should all learn from it.
Thanks very much for the call. Let's do an email here, and let me try to get to all of this. In the 2000 election, there were voter registration databases throughout the South that were cleansed. Many real voters were prevented from voting, and there were some questions about the companies hired to cleanse the databases. Maybe we should have a show on that. What's being done, if you know the answer to this, Andrea, to prevent a repeat of this same thing? It seems that this could have been done a year ago, and I'm suspicious that it's happening all over again, and nobody is stopping it. John from Milwaukee.
Well, I believe that is what we're trying to avoid here in Wisconsin. We want to make sure that the database is good, that it has that it allows everyone, every eligible voter, to vote, and does not allow any illegal voting. And that's what we're working on. And that's why we don't want this matching process to be forced in a last minute way right before the election. We believe that that will disenfranchise many, many voters.
Mm-hmm. Our number is 800-486-8655. We go to Ken from Milton next. Hi, Ken.
Yes, I'm not sure what the problem is. What are you matching with what? Are you matching voters who have moved from prior elections? Are you putting old registrations in a new format? Or what is not matching? I don't understand.
Okay,
the statewide voter registration database is required by the Federal Help America Vote Act, HAVA, and it is a huge database that has been put together in the past couple of years. And what has been entered into it is anybody who has registered to vote, people who have voted, because in many communities under population of 5,000, they were not required to register to vote before 2006. So, but they've been entered, if they have been active voters, they've been entered into the statewide voter registration database. Now, what it's being matched with is other state databases. In particular, the Department of Motor Vehicles database, also Social Security database, which we know has lots of problems. And what is coming up, these mismatches, are actually cases where somebody's data has been entered differently in two different databases at some time in their lives. And you have to understand that their data may have been entered from a handwritten application, which certainly can cause errors. If they have a hyphenated last name, if they have anything unusual, there are all kinds of opportunities for the records in the two databases not to match.
Does that give you an understanding?
The law requires you to match these other sources of the voters. I mean, other. Why not just take it from the voter registration list? I don't understand why you have to match it with other
databases
of names.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's what the Federal Help America Vote Act requires, that this matching be done. And I think it's a matter of, it's an attempt to make the list more rigorous, that the accuracy of the list. At this point, 1 in 5 records are turning up mismatches. And so it's a process, and we have to do it. The state is doing it on those new mail-in registrations since August 6th, and we have to continue the process. What we don't want is for this to be a rushed project right before the election, and we don't want it to, we don't want to penalize voters because their data was entered two different ways at two different times.
Is Wisconsin one of a number of states facing this problem?
Well, in Wisconsin, it's more complex than elsewhere because we've had, because we have this situation where elections are administered by the municipal clerks. You know, we've got 1,700 and some municipalities feeding in, and the and so many of them, more than 1,400, didn't have voter registration before. So it's a much more complex problem. But other states, also, there are other states that don't have their statewide voter database up and running yet.
Well, this could be a big problem, huh?
It could be a mess. This could be part of what this could result in Wisconsin is if voters who have mismatches are required in the end to, well, they can either clear up their mismatch if they happen to have the right proof of residence and so forth with them on registration day, or they may have to re-register. That means getting in another line.
Oh my.
Or they may be, if they can't clear it up in any way, they would be allowed to cast a provisional ballot. Well, Wisconsin's elections have received high marks over the years in studies because our system is set up that we don't need many provisional ballots. It was the large number of provisional ballots that led to all of the problems and the litigation in Ohio. We don't want to be this year's Ohio.
No, we don't. Thanks very much for the call, Ken. Let's go to Carol from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. This is not a database question, but it's something that's bothered me since the 2006 election. I live in Chippewa Falls, but I vote in the town of Eagle Point, so it's a small little area, easy polling place, not long lines. Went to the polls wearing a T-shirt that had a candidate for assembly who was a Democrat that I was supporting. And there was a person sitting at the table when I walked in who was not really checking people in. She was, I don't think she really is a poll worker. She was a poll watcher. And she's a neighbor of mine who I know is a Republican. And she told me I couldn't wear that shirt when I came in to vote. Well, luckily I had a jacket, so I just put it over it. But I really didn't believe her. And I was told later that she was wrong. How can I clear something like that up?
Well, that brings up a couple of issues. One is that the law does not allow electioneering in the polls, and so she was interpreting your T-shirt as electioneering. If you've learned, I'm not sure where the line is drawn, to be frank, but if you've learned that that's not electioneering, and you know, I know a lot of people wear T-shirts for candidates, that's fine. But one issue is that she was an observer. And the observers, election observers, are they are individuals, they are members of organizations who are there to observe the election and to observe the process. And they're an important part of our democratic process. You know, that's part of transparency in elections, and that's very good. They are not, however, they are not election officials, and they should not be talking to the voters. They should not be giving. They should not look like election officials. They should not be doing the election official's job.
Nobody else said anything. Just that person. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Carol. Thanks for the call. We'll welcome more phone calls in a moment. We also want to talk with Peggy Taylor here in just a moment, for a few moments, co-producer of My Vote Performs. And this is something that's new. It hasn't been undertaken before, it's my understanding, in the United States. Performance art pieces about citizenship and voting will be presented in some Milwaukee polling locations on November 4. We'll talk about that, and maybe this is something that will go national. May as well be entertained and informed while you are, and inspired while you're voting. Our number continues to be 800-486-8655. Andrea Kaminsky, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, is with us. And Peggy will join us momentarily, co-producer of My Vote Performs. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls now, and Eric from Appleton. Hi, Eric.
Hi. I'm just a little confused on the whole lawsuit, because from what I understand, that They're not going to be reviewing every person in the state of Wisconsin, just those that have registered within a certain time frame. And from what I understand, some of those organizations even turn some of their people in for turning in fraudulent registration. So I think we should do it to not disenfranchise the people of the state of Wisconsin.
Those organizations, what the caller is talking about is that this summer there were two organizations in Milwaukee, citizen organizations, who registered voters. They had people deputized to register voters. They turned and they identified, they self-identified the problem. They said there is a problem with these as they looked through the list. And those deputy registrars are now in the hands of law enforcement, and they are being followed up on. That is appropriate.
And thanks for the call. Let's introduce Peggy to the conversation for a moment. This is pretty interesting what's happening at some polling locations in the Milwaukee area on November 4. There will be art performed that looks at citizenship and voting. Peggy Taylor is co-producer of My Vote Performs, and we wanted to hear just a little bit about this, which is a terrific idea, I think. Hi, Peggy. How are you?
I'm fine. It's great to be on the
show. Yeah, nice to have you on the show. Now, this is a new idea. Is it the first time it's been done in the country?
As far as we can tell, it is a first of its kind in the nation project.
Huh.
And you talked about wanting it to spread, and we've gotten incredible support from the State Election Division staff and also from the Wisconsin Arts Board. And part of that is because they'd love to see other communities and other states take this on. And we have had initial conversations, and it's one of the reasons I originally visited with Andrea was
mm-hmm.
for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. So it's how many polling places, and what are you going to perform?
There is going to be performance art at 12 different polling places in the city of Milwaukee on November 4th. And in general, they'll be between 4 and 8 during the highest times when we're expecting the longest lines. And it'll include recorded sound, dance, original music, puppetry, video, interactive sculpture, and storytelling. And all of it is nonpartisan. And all of it is to celebrate and enhance the voting experience.
That's great. So if the lines are long, Andrea, this is a good idea to have this going on, right?
That's right. We really liked the idea because, you know, politics has become so very polarized, and it's so very serious. And it's really nice to have art as another way to look at elections and at government and to make Election Day more of an event, more of a joyful celebration, which is what it should be, because we have this opportunity to elect our president every 4 years.
Do you know, are you all over the city, Peggy, with this performance?
We're in 12 of the city's 15 voting districts, and just to give you a sense of a couple of the projects about what it's going to be about, and these are projects that are going to be presented at the October 3rd conference, and we're so glad to be there because we see our goals as being so parallel about trying to encourage more people to vote and make people more aware of the experience of voting. So at Silver Spring Neighborhood Center, there's going to be a spoken word artist, Dan Vaughn, and he is going to be collecting words along with some other spoken word artists from people, and they're going to be putting together short one-minute poems on the spot that have to do with voting, and we'll actually do that on the 3rd. So the League will have a chance to put in words, and again, it'll all be nonpartisan. And also at the Clinton and Bernice Rose Senior Center, John Schneider has been interviewing the senior citizens there about their voting experiences, and he is putting together a song that three very talented people at the senior center will sing intermittently between the hours of 4 and 8. And this has been a heartrending project. I mean, what you've been talking about this morning, I've been in tears about this ever since I started working on it last year, and that is that John interviewed these senior citizens, and to give an example, I got the transcript. There was one fellow who was in the military in Montgomery, Alabama in 1962, and he saw people barred from voting with hoses and dogs. And he said, you know, you have to be an idiot not to vote.
Mm-hmm. Was this a hard thing? How did you happen to be able to put this into voting places? It's such an unusual, it's a great idea, but we think of them as being places where, you know, people stand in line and talk and not watch theater. Was it hard to get this to happen?
What's been fascinating is I do believe that this is happening because it's Wisconsin.
Huh.
I believe the people in Wisconsin are willing to take a risk. The state election division, they unanimously endorsed this project last summer. The Milwaukee election division, Sue Edmund, she's been incredibly supportive. And we could have done this in way more polling sites, because you go to the polling site managers and they go, wow, we're going to have these long lines and you're going to educate and entertain people while they're standing in line. This is great. And it's all about those specific sites. So each project is really meant to conform to the needs of that site. For example, at Silver Spring Neighborhood Center, where there is a spoken word project, there are a lot of children standing in line with their parents there. And they said, we want a project that anybody can participate in. So whether it's a four-year-old with a parent or guardian putting in a word, or a senior citizen, everybody can participate in that project. And at the Clinton and Rose Senior Center, there it's actual participants at the center who are talking about their voting experiences, and where they will be the ones singing the song that's going to be called to the people who came before.
Oh, nice, nice. Congratulations. I hope you're at my polling place. I'd love to see it. Thanks, Peggy, very much for being with us. And talking about children, the League encourages, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I believe the League encourages you to bring your children with you when you vote so that they become involved in the process themselves. They can't vote, of course, but they see what it's all about. Andrea, is that right?
Sure. I did that when my kids were little. And, you know, another thing that that we're encouraging is that 16 and 17-year-olds can become poll workers in the state of Wisconsin. If they have, basically, if they have good grades and they have permission from their parents and their school, they can become poll workers. And what a great way to learn about elections and, I hope, become lifelong voters when they come of age.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
We're really excited about the My Vote Performs evening on October 3rd, and we just think that it's a wonderful opportunity.
Yeah, it is. Peggy, thanks so much for being with us. We have a number of people still on the line with voting questions. We go to Ann from Madison next. Hi, Ann.
Hi. Well, I assume that HAVA eventually will be repealed because it's really the Help America Not Vote Act. But I'd like to compare it to like information, the 411 number, which is national now. And with computerization, you can call someone who may be in another country and ask for a number like the U.S. Department of Commerce, and they won't be able to find it because everything is so computerized that if they look under Department of Commerce instead of DEPT of Commerce, or it's alphabetized differently, computerization is making everything very, very confused. And I worked in the Wisconsin prison system for a year, and inmates' names are taken down by clerks when they get in the system. If a guy named John is written down as J-O-N instead of J-O-H-N, he is not allowed to change that name. So once he gets off parole, he probably wouldn't be able to vote under these silly rules. And second, the Wisconsin Republican Victory Committee, which I assume is something that's been set up in every state by the McCain campaign, is going to send out a second wave of these rather confusing, but approved by the Wisconsin Elections Board, the Government Accountability Board, applications. And the city clerk's office says you should get your absentee ballots in every case by going to the city clerk, you know, your own city clerk. And if you have to register at another city clerk's office because yours is too small, they will send you there. They'll know where to tell you to go. But you should never use these forms, application forms, for an absentee ballot that are sent to you by any campaign because they're confusing. And, of course, when Republicans are sending these to Democrats all over the state, they don't have the idea of getting a lot of Democrats out to vote.
Andrea.
Yeah, well, the caller brought up a number of issues. Computerized systems, databases are only as good as the data entry. And the data entry is done by humans. And anybody who has mistyped an email address, you know, it bounces right back if there's one letter wrong. That's how good it is. The caller also mentioned about the felon list. And I do want to say that felons are disenfranchised, but when they're convicted, then they are re-enfranchised. Their voting rights are restored when they're off papers, when they've completed their parole or probation, and they've completed their, you know, the community supervision, they are allowed to vote again. These felon lists that the caller referred to is something that the Government Accountability Board is required to produce for every election. It costs $35,000 to $40,000 each time to develop a list of people who are still disenfranchised because they have committed a felony. And these lists then are mailed at additional cost to all of the clerks around the country and gotten to the polling places. And the whole idea is to keep these felons from voting. The League of Women Voters advocates for restoring voting rights to felons as soon as they are released from incarceration. Or if they're never incarcerated, they never have to go to jail, then they never lose their voting rights. And the reason we believe in this is a couple of things. One is that we believe it's rehabilitative. It gets people back into their reintegrated into society. After all, they have families, they're raising families, they're working jobs and paying taxes, etc. And the other reason is that it really would make election administration that much more efficient and smoother.
Okay. Give us the phone number again for the registration for Making Democracy Work, please,
sure.
Andrea.
608-256-0827, Making Democracy Work Summit, co-sponsored by League of Women Voters, Community Shares of Wisconsin, and the Joyce Foundation.
Thank you. Thanks, Andrea, so much for being with us. We could have gone hours with this. Andrea Kaminsky from the League of Women Voters, Executive Director here in Wisconsin. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing and to Katie Mattson for on-air production on the Ideas Network.